Welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a career prosecutor in Savannah, Georgia, and I'm grateful to welcome back that Leo guy to discuss how our society and our legal systems are failing to redirect vulnerable kids from the path that leads to gang life. Can we stop the cycle of violence? Join the conversation. So we're back with that Leo guy.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Super duper.
Super duper. We've been talking about basically gang cases, but gang cases on a federal level, the Vicar cases and RICO and all of these organizational things that you've seen and the violence involved. And I think, you know, the first episode kind of laid out what we're talking about from an organization that we're concerned about or types of organizations we're concerned about. I have to start with this. There's always this concern, right? And I think I mentioned in the first episode that we're not solving the problem with prosecution. And I don't...
Wait, you're telling me we're not winning the war on drugs?
We're not winning the war on really anything.
Yeah, right.
I think, you know, there... I come to this with some age. I mean, my hair is like gray at this point. So, but there's a sense of futility. Like, I've seen things try, different methods, different approaches. Most of them, there's not been a full commitment from the people that have been tasked with being committed to doing what they're supposed to be doing. But even when things were pretty much running as well as you could hope for, there's only been, I'm not even going to say it's a blip. It's just, it feels like you're only making a difference in kind of a micro way instead of a macro way.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you're seeing something different, first of all. Are you seeing something different?
No. I don't know. No, I'm not, is the short answer. It's a huge topic and problem to reduce, I mean, the young man violent crime issues that go on, victim and suspect side. And across the board, I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about, but reducing that is where my heart is. And it's just, it's like you can do what incarceration is supposed to do, right? You can punish those that do. You can take them out of society so they can't do it again. You can give some kind of, not restitution, that's not the right word, but not vengeance, that's not right. You can make it right to some degree for the victim and their family, whatever that word is.
I know what you're talking about. It's not, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's those goals of criminal law.
Yeah. But you can do those. But getting the kid not to pick up the gun, or if he does, getting him to cut the crap after the first time he does it is that's the question.
So it's like reducing the appeal, of being involved in crime or making it look less cool. And, you know, let's face it, there are so many things out there that make, you know, violence or money or whatever the gang can provide, that structure that you talked about in the first episode. We got to do better. I mean, that's just really it. You know, it's almost like we've made it so attractive. Why wouldn't people in those circumstances want to be part of that? How do we, and I don't know if there's a way to fix it, but I don't think that ignoring the problem is fixing it either. And I've seen what ignoring it's doing.
Yeah. I have one opinion on it, that this is just what I feel. I don't represent anybody but me. I own guns. I like guns. I like shooting guns. I like having a gun. If I'm out and about, other people have guns. I like to have a gun. I've never pulled it out and waved it at somebody or been an idiot like that. But to me, a gun is a tool. And the guns, making the guns illegal and tightly regulating the weapons, to me, we're past that. Gun buybacks, to me, are a joke. Gun laws that slap people on the wrist. If you get caught with a pistol without a permit, they take the gun and you get a fine. Like you get a court date. Like I think that violations involving firearms, violations, not the firearm itself, a firearm's like a car or a bat or a stick or a shoe. It's just a thing you got. And it's the gross misuse. Is it much easier to be misused than a shoe? Absolutely. It's hard to kill a man with a shoe. It's very, very easy with a gun. I think that the repercussion for gun misuse, I think the laws should be reduced and the ones that are there should hit. Meaning, if you shoot up a house, don't hit anybody. I think that should be 20 years in prison. You missed. You tried to kill, whether you really tried to kill or you were trying to scare. I think that sends a message in multiple ways. I think it sends a message to the shooter. I think you're going to think more once that comes out. I mean, in Memphis, they started doing carjackings federally. And
Oh, wow.
these guys, because I mean, I don't remember the exact numbers. They're having like 80 a month or something, which in a city the size of Memphis was a lot. There's just a really high per capita ratio of violent carjackings. And they were just taking them, they'd joyride, they'd go jack five more. They'd just have a blast that night, just robbing and shooting and living the life. Like you said, glory, fun, excitement, not thinking about the real life repercussions. They started doing them federally and they went down. I mean, dudes were getting 25, 30 years
Wow.
and they'd been caught for five carjackings before and done almost no time. And then number six, it goes fed. They hit the guy with the gun or they shot at him as they drove away and you get 30 years in prison. And word started getting out a bit. So going back to, and carjacking is very violent. For people that don't really know carjacking, it's not stealing a car. It's using force or violence to take a car. Usually it's a gun. The ones that they were taking, it generally involved, shots being fired or it being put against somebody's forehead or, some aggravating factor that brought it very close to being a murder. I just think that the gun laws being treated as serious as they are, because they are serious. Weapon on school grounds. That shouldn't be as minor as it is. That should be enormous. I think that the school shootings would likely go down if, man, if I get caught with a gun at my high school, I'm getting tried as an adult. I'm getting a billion years in prison. I'm in huge trouble. If I shoot at somebody, if I whatever laws they choose, but God, if you shoot at somebody or you shoot and hit somebody and they don't die, you should never be on bond for that. I mean, I just can't imagine, and everybody is. I mean, as well as me, you shoot somebody, you're getting a bond. They don't no bond those.
I think some of it has been a change too. Like I my experience is if you shot somebody and we've done everything we're supposed to do. Like I get my case filed and I'm taking it to grand jury in a timely manner. I've back in the day, now of course, this is the problem. I stopped being a regular line prosecutor right before COVID. So COVID changed the game. I mean, it really changed the mindset of the bench and everybody else. Like, just this, oh, well, we're not going to hold anybody. The sheriff's department here, like, everybody should get a bond. There was a large, And there's been a large push, like through the appellate courts, here and federally, about like bonds and stuff like that. Like, oh, you can't just hold some person without a bond, forever, which fair, except that the poster children for these things, like, oh, he was just being held on a speeding citation, is like not factually correct. When you actually dig behind these big headline news stories, and you get into what actually happened, like that person had probation holds and just all of this other stuff that we're going to ignore because the arrest where they got caught and then all those other warrants piled on was for a speeding violation or whatever it was. And again, I was watching the Georgia legislature this week for reasons. And they took up a statute where they're trying to talk about these post-conviction relief things. And they put one in place last year that I'm still like slapping my head, like, oh, after conviction, you can file something saying that you were abused as a child and get your sentence reduced by half. And I think their intention was like, hey, if there's some mitigating thing in the case itself, like you've been beaten by this person before, like there's some mitigating something to that, maybe that should be considered in sentencing, which it should be. But what they've now allowed for is even for mandatory minimum sentencing is like, say it's an armed robbery or something, you can cut it in half. Judge can cut it in half. Post-conviction, like, there's nothing in there that mandates that you're talking to the victims. I mean, it is maddening what they're doing, and I don't really know what to do. So, like this one that they were talking about, the poster child for that case that caused this legislator to bring it forward was a guy got convicted of armed robbery, had multiple priors, and in Georgia, your second armed robbery or your fourth conviction, you're going to get a mandatory maximum sentence without parole. And in his case, it was life. He got life without parole. And he was the inside guy for the armed robbery. He was like at a restaurant or something. He was the inside guy for the armed robbery. He wasn't the gunman. And they're like, oh, he shouldn't be in prison for life without parole. I'm like, no, that's actually not what happened. But because like the New York Times ran a story about this poor guy who just was the inside guy is doing life without parole for armed robbery without looking at the criminal history or anything else, they're like, oh, this is just wrong. And like, no, it isn't. No, it isn't.
And I mean, we've all done stuff wrong. None of us are angels here, but I've never worked at Applebee's and told them like when to come in the back door with a gun to rob the safe. Like, that's a level of criminality that it is reasonable to expect death to come out of that. So don't do that.
I don't think it's a complicated concept, but I think that where we are as a society is that we're trying to make excuses for people and
Well,
their.
we have, I mean, there's all these stats, you know, we're the most incarcerated population, and the systemic racism conversation, and the, you know, people are getting screwed, and there's a cycle of fucking over certain groups. And
That's the
just,
narrative. That is the narrative.
yeah, and it's just at, on the other hand, letting a dude that's done multiple armed robberies, regardless of how he looks and has a serious other criminal history, there's just several things that happen. It's likely he does it again. I mean, what's he been doing in prison? Did he learn how to weld? Did he learn how to be an electrician?
No.
Unlikely. And I mean, we've talked about it with juvenile justice. The message that you send to him and to everybody he knows is, man, Johnny set up another robbery and he's out again. And man,
That
I've
makes
said,
it sexy, right? It makes it attractive.
right, it's cool. It's not that big a deal. And violent crime needs to be a big deal. And, you know, I'm not talking about drugs and prostitution and victimless crimes, but
No, I'm
just,
not either. And honestly, violent crime to me is probably it's the reason I stuck with prosecution as long as I did. you have victims who need their voice heard. That's the whole point. And so I feel like, and something that you said earlier about gun laws, and I think that, this, again, this is a conversation. It's being approached very differently in all over the country. Like, in Georgia, we're moving more toward constitutional carry, which has its own problems, right? Like, we're getting rid of those carrying a gun in a school zone. That's not a crime anymore. Carrying a gun in a housing project, not a crime anymore. And then you have the repercussions of that. Like, just recently, and you were talking about school shootings, there was a school shooting in, I don't know, gosh, it's North Georgia. And the dad got convicted of
I remember this.
providing a gun to his son, who then committed this heinous, horrible school shooting, killed a bunch of people. And the dad should have known, definitely in these circumstances, because I think it was very
Yeah,
clear.
that's what I was about to say. I think the circumstances were like kid had serious mental health issues, had made threats, and dad was like, "Happy 14th, here's your AR," or something
Yes,
crazy.
like, are you insane? And of
Some fucking
course,
nonsense. Yeah.
yeah, it's crazy. And most cases don't, I don't think, I've never seen that before. That doesn't mean that that doesn't exist. It's just, having the evidence is pretty rare. But we are kind of taking away from that idea that, hey, I brought a gun to school and I'm going to get in trouble for it. There's just that mindset too, and I've seen this in the juvenile justice system of, the child is the product of the surroundings. And some of that's true, certainly. But a lack of accountability doesn't make that better.
It does, and it does the kid no favors. I mean,
No.
I'm not saying the answer is if you're 14 and you stick somebody up, get life. I'm not saying
No.
that I got robbed by a 15-year-old at gunpoint and he shot at me as a cop doing undercover work. And I'm sure he's out by now, but I didn't want that kid to get life. That's a kid. But I mean, what we've talked about, it just, I mean, I caught a carjacker red-handed, me and my partner, like carjacking an old woman with a gun. And he was out either the same day or the next day. He ran from us. He ran into Ulta Beauty Supply and like tried to shove his gun like behind some shampoo, and we got him.
Lipstick on,
Yeah, right. Put on a little, throw a little wig on or something, do his eyelashes. So, but he got right out, and guess what? He got caught for like 2 weeks later at like 40th and Bull. He carjacked a dude, hit him in the face with his gun several times. Fucked his face up, rammed a police car. Like, cops pulled him over. He pulled over and then backed up and rammed the police car. But he was 15, so he didn't know how to drive well. And so he like gets caught. But it's like, how the hell is he out? Like, we just caught him trying to carjack a 76-year-old woman that was at Starbucks. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and that's the problem. So we can make excuses for behavior, right? And I think as a society, especially now, I mean, you can have any kind of mental health crisis, or call it a mental health crisis, and people are supposed to give you grace, and I believe in that, especially, I think everybody kind of agrees, like, there are things you give second chances for. Putting a gun in someone's face is not one of them in my book.
And that's a great point of what should be another law that is strictly enforced. Not pulling the trigger, but if I get mad at you because you're taking too long to push your grocery buggy at Kroger across the street in front of me, and I get out and point a gun at you and say, "Move it, bitch," that should be a 10-year. That should be a 15-year hit for playing like that. Keep the gun on your hip, quietly be frustrated because Christy walks slow, and keep your ass in the truck,
Hey,
bro.
the truth is that has shifted as well. So I remember when I started, this is 1994. I had a probation revocation in front of what was then our hanging judge, Judge Head. And I had a probation revocation. This is like how things have changed. So Back in the day, it was like slight evidence. You could get someone revoked in full for that.
Mm-hmm.
We've dialed that back to like you can only get revoked for as much as you would get for the underlying crime that is alleged in the petition. So if your probation officer only alleges, say, possession of a firearm, but you did something like put a gun in someone's face and all that stuff, and they only put, say, pointing a pistol at another in there, you
Which
could
is a
only,
misdemeanor in Georgia, right?
right, exactly. It's 12 months. Then you couldn't revoke somebody in full. But this is the scenario I had in front of Judge Head. And this was like back when everything was done, like you had a zillion cases on a docket and you're just putting up witnesses. Like, I had this, I was covering it for somebody else. Witness was there. I put up the officer who had basically seen somebody in a parking lot put a gun to his girlfriend, like pull a gun at his girlfriend. And we didn't even get through the direct of this officer
He
who had,
revoked him in full.
he revoked him on full
Yeah.
and, cussed out the officer. That's aggravated assault.
I thought you
You
were going to say
can't.
for not shooting him. Okay. He said he
No,
should have been wounded. All
no.
right.
That would have been like way back in the day.
Yeah.
But no. But it was, he cussed out the officer because the officer charged it as pointing a pistol. And that's what was on the petition. And he's like, no, that's aggravated assault. And then, after revoking him in full, explain to me how that is an aggravated assault, sir.
That's awkward.
Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, explain
Yeah. I'm
that.
glad you're in the hot seat, not
Yeah,
me.
exactly. Because it wasn't on me. I mean, I
You
hadn't
should have
drafted.
objected to the judge. Objection, Your Honor, badgering.
No, absolutely not.
No.
I was all on board for this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like one of the things I got into as a prosecutor later in my career is when I would see a petition brought by a probation officer that looked like that, I'd draft my own and file it as a supplement because, let's charge them with everything they did.
Yeah.
And that's just not happening. But, that holding people accountable, like you were talking about with the shooting at a house or bringing a gun on school property, those things are being ignored more or less. And, we did, and I was talking about the changes to Georgia's gang statutes, and thrown in there is a new subsection. It's not a subsection, a new statute, which basically seems like a standalone called drive-by shooting, which of course you can get the same with aggravated assault and everything else, but drive-by shooting is essentially exactly what you described. And it's a 10 to 20.
Is that more or less than a normal shooting?
It's more, it has a higher minimum. So for an aggravated assault, which of course could be anything from putting a gun to somebody's head to squeezing the trigger,
Yeah.
that is normally 1 to 20. You have some higher things aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer would be 5 to 20, those kind of things that raise minimum. But 10 to 20 for a drive-by is, it's good if you can prove it. But a lot of times, people aren't looking at the car that goes by.
Yeah.
But it again, you also have to have people who know that statute's there because that statute is in the gang section. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't have elements about gang in there. So you can charge it separately, but it's not where aggravated assault
Yeah,
is.
that's weird that it's over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it you have you're hiding the ball basically. And I don't know how many people are actually using what's available to them. I do want to talk about the juvenile justice system for a minute though. And I know you've described like kids getting arrested over and over. I feel like one of the other problems we have is you have a kid that's in a bad environment or has a mom that can't take care of them or whatever. And the other part of that is the involvement of the courts in where they're staying. And there is so much designed to make this child feel better about themselves or to treat whatever mental health things are present for them. There is so much money spent on that. I mean, I was stunned by how many things are in place for that. And yet, it's all like other mental health things. And I don't know if you're familiar with some of the mental health things that are out there from a psychological or therapeutic standpoint, but a lot of it's self-reported. Like, so if the kid says, I feel bad because mom's mean to me, then they automatically are like, oh, mom's bad parent kind of thing, as opposed to like the kid may have done something, and
I mean,
I
kid, I have a bunch of kids and they're their own people. Like, yeah, if I give them an AR and they have mental health
Yes.
issues, yeah. But like, I mean, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this quick story. I take no blame for this at all, by the way. Zero accountability on my end. But my 7-year-old, hopefully not eavesdropping, he was at soccer camp all week. He loves playing soccer. So he's at camp all week. And I took Friday off because he wanted me to come to his last day and watch. It's like a 3-hour-a-day camp. So I'm like, okay. So I just took the day off. I'm like, I'll come watch and then get him ice cream and go back to the house, whatever. So he's been telling me all week that there was this little boy in his camp group that was saying bad words. He said, oh, he's calling people losers. He's saying the F word and the S word, and he's calling people an S word. I didn't explore what that means. Like, is he calling people a little shit? I doubt it, but whatever. My son was uncomfortable by what he was hearing. So camp ends. We get home yesterday, and I was outside. I was doing something. Oh, I was moving a car. I had a car in the driveway. It was kind of a weird place. I was like, I gotta move this car. And he comes outside doing something. I said, hey, come here. Jump in my lap. Let's go. Let's do something. So I was gonna let him sit in my lap and go, move the car. And he climbs in my lap. I shut the door. And just in this burst of excitement, he goes, where the fuck are we going? That's not my fault, man. That's that little boy's fault that he listened to. But I say all that.
Go ahead.
The kids are their own people, and he's 7, so he's a little more controllable. I had him write, I will not say bad words 10 times. He didn't try. He wrote it real sloppy. I had him do it again, and he apologized profusely. He said, I said, where the freak are we going? Freak. I'm like, I'm just trying not to die laughing like you are. But, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. But
But kids, and you're right,
they're
they're
their own person. That's the point. Like, I
yeah.
had no way of predicting he would say that when I took him for a ride. Some parents, you have no way, but most of them, I think they're funneled toward a problem to some degree with repeated lack of consequences and boundaries.
Well, and that repeated lack of consequences, if that's starting at home, and more often than not it is, going to court and having the court reduce the consequences even more for something that's more serious that got
Just
them pulled in.
reinforces that lesson that I can do whatever I want.
That's right. And I can manipulate an adult into believing anything I say.
Oh, so I need to say that I had a bad job. I mean, you could be a 50-year-old man or
Yeah.
woman and go, okay, so I need to say that I had childhood trauma and that's how I cut my sentence in half.
Yeah.
Okay, let's work on this.
Yeah,
Got nothing but
exactly.
time in there.
Exactly. And it is terrifying to me that we are going in this direction because we already have a lack of accountability on multiple levels in every imaginable way, it seems like these days. And I'm concerned that, again, we're looking macro and micro with this, but when you don't have it on the micro level, when you don't have it on, say, the kid who's carjacking a lady at the Starbucks, then you're not going to have it for these bigger groups that are doing scary, awful things, right? And these gangs. And that reinforcement is a real problem. Like when we're looking at, say, your vice lords. We can't, I, you know, this was starting out as a whole Vice Lords thing. But when you look at the Vice Lords, it seems like they have more micro accountability sometimes than our
Yeah.
adults do. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is.
Really? Because I'm thinking about you described that, what is 80% of people in Memphis are in gangs. Is that what you said? That's kind of high.
No, I wouldn't go that far. the young people, the schools are filled with it. I'm not 80% of the adult, 4 out of 5 people you meet at Kroger are not gang members. But the schools are filled with it, and the young man, you kind of have a choice by the time you hit high school as far as what are you going to do? Are you going to have a group or are you not?
And again, like I mentioned before, like life seems to be just a pale extension of high school. There's always the clique. There's always, the people you associate with shape you. And, especially like when you're talking about you get out of the family, if kids aren't accountable to their family, and obviously these kids aren't, and a lot of kids aren't, like you really have to hope that they have a good friend group or that, that they're getting reinforced in some good way, and that's not
It's everything. The kids are chameleons, man. Kids are not comfortable in their skin, pretty across the board. So you take a pretty good kid and you put him with a bunch of gang members. In a month, he's going to be talking different, thinking different, behaving differently. But thinking differently is the dangerous part. They're going to change with just exactly what you said. You take, I mean, what's that movie? Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd or something. And they swear it's a perfect example. I mean, it's I'm sounding kind of woke and kind of a certain way and not accountability, but I honestly believe that the circumstances are where it all starts. And can I ruin your show with some politics? And I'm not going to ruin it, or do you want me to just skip that
Go
entirely?
ahead, go ahead.
Because I can't do it on mine at all. So I'll do a little bit, and it's related to this. So I kind of lean libertarian. I don't know how that would play out in reality if there was a libertarian in charge. I have a pretty smart friend who says it would be an absolute disaster in real life, that in theory it's all good. But I'm not trying to talk about that. I am saying I believe in freedom of choice and individual liberty and freedom. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying about if you make the choice to pick up a fucking gun, you might go to prison. That's an individual choice. And society shouldn't have to suffer for your dumbassery. If you're picking up a gun, shooting at people, and I'm wearing my Glock 19 every day and, taking my AR out to plink cans, why can't I have, I'm not going into detailed gun laws because I'm not going to try to undermine the ATF's laws here, but I'll just say it. Why can't I have a machine gun if I'm not shooting people with said machine gun? If I'm going to the range and I know how to use it, and if I'm irresponsible with it, I should pay. To me, that's just the common sense approach. And I don't know that I needed to pull politics into it, but the idea is kind of you create your own destiny. And making excuses and saying like, oh yeah, well, I'm 40, but my mama beat me up when I was 6. Like at some point you got to go, that sucks, man. I'm sorry, but we can't have you sticking people up anymore.
Yeah, I cross-examined a defense expert very recently about exactly that issue. At what point does someone become accountable for their behavior, even if they had a terrible childhood? And even he had to admit, well, the juvenile mind, I mean, this person was an academic, had no practical life experience. Was his entire career at this point was to be called as a defense witness to say that childhood trauma is, is a thing.
Okay, and we're coming back to that, these higher counts, but go ahead.
But what he said is, well, by 25, you're definitely going to be responsible for your actions. I'm like, great, because in my case, I could point to something specific where at 25 he committed a crime he was arrested for. And of course he's like, by the time the crimes that he was charged with in my case, he was in his 30s. It's like, awesome, thanks. Like all this crap. And of
You
course, within my,
accidentally supported the prosecution.
well, not even accidentally. So like he had been told this whole like scenario about life that was not corroborated by anybody else in the family. I mean, it just was, but it is that that is being presented to the courts and to the legislature and to the media. And so we are getting a very skewed view. What did you want to say about?
Well, if he was a Was he one of these for hire experts kind of things? So a lot, they get handed a report and they do a lot of these. They do it for a living. So they don't know the case like the prosecutor, the investigator, the defendant, the defense attorney, even the judge. They get handed, like you just said, one piece. So when you started asking specific questions, like, well, at what age would you consider? Like you're saying there's no accountability to a point. What, put a number on it. And he didn't know the case well enough. And I've seen that some, I don't want to say consistently, because I just haven't had the amount of trials like you're a freaking trial lawyer. Like, I'm not gonna pretend to have that kind of experience. But those guys make that mistake. And when the prosecutors start exploring the details, they just don't know, because all they know is I got paid to come here and do a job. And some of them are conniving. And I'll tell you a story of a trial that I had. They had an expert, I'm going to put air quotes that the listener can't see, come in on phone records. He was this big old dude with a beard and tattoos everywhere. He looked like a big yoked up biker guy or something. And I didn't know anything about him. And luckily, I understand tower data pretty well. Good enough. I know how to use it. And he was. I'll just say it, and hopefully I can say it clear enough. I had location records. I'd done a historical cell site warrant. I had where the guy was. It was a carjacking case, and in federal court. And when you're looking at tower data, there's a little arc. It shows like a triangle in the direction that the tower was, that the phone was from the tower. So there will be a tower and a triangle coming out from that in a direction. And they say, like, yeah, the phone was in this triangle. And what they do is they put a little colored arc. It's like an acute angle. I'm doing it with my hands, but nobody can see it. It's like an acute angle. And there's a little colored arc. There might be like a little yellow arc in there, and it's shaded. And that arc doesn't actually mean anything. It's on a map, so it looks like it has meaning, but it doesn't signify, the person doesn't have to be within that arc. They should be within that vector, that direction that it's pointing, but not within the small shaded arc that just denotes the direction. So this guy came in, and he was telling the jury that basically you can see where the robbery happened, and there was like this whole car chase with the robbery, all this crazy stuff that happened. And he said, look, that's not within the arch. Like, clearly this couldn't have been him. Like, you have my client's phone records. And he didn't say this, but this is the message they're putting out. And you can see that, and he misled about what the diagram meant, is the very short version. He was misleading the jury. And I was like, my elbow was so deep in that prosecutor's ribs. I was like, put me back on the stand. What? Like, I'm sitting there writing, and she's like, Leo, shut up. Like, I know how to do my job. And I'm like, I'm writing, like, put me back and ask me an open-ended question. And just like sliding that, like shoving it under her arm. And we were able to dismantle that. I found out later, and the guy got convicted. Did he get convicted? Yeah, he got convicted. And we found out later, his brother, I ended up knowing his brother. It was a unique last name. And I was like, hey, are you related to this guy? And no, it was his cousin. He was like, oh yeah, that's my piece of shit cousin. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, oh yeah, he got fired. He used to be a cop, but he was like, he had like a prostitute informant that he was sleeping with, and he was doing all this. This is the quote expert witness on phone records. Well, he had gotten fired, and he said he almost got indicted. So they ended up just being like, dude, get the fuck out of here. Like, please don't come back around anywhere near our city. They didn't charge him. I don't know if they didn't have the case or what, but these hired guns, I'm sure there's ones that are doing it honestly and from the heart and for good reason, but there's some BS out there too.
There definitely is. And of course, it's an industry, much like, and I've talked about like this whole thing with the juvenile dependency side of it, not the, but it bleeds over into how kids are handled on the criminal side as well. Just this whole industry, cottage industry of psychological folks and probation, and just there's so much money being spent. Like the expert that I cross-examined, I think he got paid $30,000.
Jesus. It's
It's
funny
crazy.
you say money and probation. The kid that robbed and shot at me that I mentioned was, he said in the interview that he was on probation for armed robbery and he had to pay fines. He had to pay monthly fines and he was robbing pizza delivery men to pay his probation fines.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So someone puts someone on probation for armed robbery. I mean, you can't,
Yeah.
it's just, there's
He was on.
so many things wrong with that. I have so many thoughts. I don't even want to get
Yeah.
into all of it, but you feel like, and like I said, there's an element of futility. Like the laws can only do so much, and but it's still better than, and I'm going to make a comparison. Like you read through the Manifesto of the Vice Lords, which is complex. I mean, it is detailed. It sounds almost like it's like a shadow government kind of thing, is the way they're
Yeah.
trying to set it up and make it sound like, oh, we're just, like for, we do community service, like you mentioned,
Yeah.
I've
We
heard
just
of
do
it.
it different than them. We don't believe in their system. We got our own system.
Right, but here's the thing, you live in a society with other people, and that's the whole purpose of the legislature and the court system, is that we come together and we talk about it and we figure it out, and we don't have these weird little subgroups that do their own personal enforcement. And that in order to like, and I this is a closing argument that I make all the time, is like, if this person was retaliating, if this shooting happened, this murder happened because the defendant felt like they deserved to retaliate against the victim, that's not how this works. That is not how this works. This is a legal system. That person, if they had done something bad to you, if that victim had done something bad to you, you call the police, you bring them to court, we have a trial with evidence. And that decision is made here. It's not made out on the street by some guy who's hyped up on whatever or angry about something. That is not how we do things.
And who really doesn't know? I mean, I can't tell you, and I'm sure you have too, murders where people were just wrong and
Yes.
they were misinformed and they went and hurt somebody real bad or killed them or threatened them or stuck a gun in their face and they were dead fucking wrong. And it comes out later, and that's a reason like you need probable cause to arrest and proof beyond a reasonable doubt to convict because somebody telling me that somebody was talking bad about me, like, hey, like, what if I went to you and I was like, hey, Rob said he's gonna kill you. And you were like, I gotta get him first. Instead of calling the cops, and you just went and hit him. And I just got what I want. Like, now you're both gone.
Fast. I'd have trouble catching him.
Yeah,
Sorry.
yeah, yeah.
Still.
Was that a running joke?
It was a running joke.
All right. I missed that the first time. All right, that's
That's
true.
okay. But yeah, no, it is definitely not the way society, and we made an agreement as a unit, as a country, that this is how it's going to run. And everybody's voice needs to be heard. And I'm not saying that people's voices don't need to be heard in the proper place at the proper time, but there are rules about that too. You get to just go shout down whatever. I'm concerned about where things are going. I'm concerned about this idea, this like Vice Lord's idea or other gangs' idea, that we can just take the law into our own hands
Yeah,
and
we can provide the structure and make our own rules and manage it ourselves.
it's concerning and it's
It's
scary.
not great.
Yeah.
And staying on the juveniles briefly, the actual facilities are awful. Have you ever been in a juvenile correction facility?
Yes.
It's not great.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible. And
They're
it's
to
what? Go ahead.
they're I mean, the ones I've been in, they're in large groups. There's a lot of loudness. It's chaotic. They're trying to get over all the time, and they're learning. They're not, I don't want to say they're not well run, because that puts it on the administrator, which I'm not doing, like the jail administrator or the youth detention center administrator. But the way that they're designed is not going to make those kids, those young future murderers, future this, future that, it's not going to make them not become that, from what I've seen.
Yeah, the rehabilitative angle, and that's the problem. Like, we keep trying to shift and move the ball as far as how do we rehabilitate kids. It's like the education system, at least, in Georgia public education, it's like every 2 years they want to change what the criteria are. And I think the same thing is true in juvenile rehab or juvenile detention. We are not consistent. There aren't consistent consequences, and that chaotic feel that the inmates are running the asylum kind of thing is really obvious. And of course, that's been true in the prison system too. And it's one of the things I noticed. Like, I'm just getting back to the laws that have changed in Georgia. The gang laws, they added a subsection. You can be prosecuted for trying to disrupt the prison system now. Like,
Good.
yeah, it's good. Again, you have to prove it. And then what do you do with them? Like, if they're already in prison, I've had this happen where, and I'm sure this is something you've come across too, where they're moving drugs in prison and some of that's gang related. And you hear it in jail calls, prison calls, whatever. But what do you do with them? Like, you've got max prisons where, you've got people who are living high, living well. What is the answer?
It needs a redesign, and I have the answer. I'm glad you asked. I have the solution. Just kidding. But
Good, say.
this
Dang.
is something I've been saying for a while, and I truly believe, aside from the gun law changes that I mentioned, to more freedom to make your choice, and you're more effed if you make the choice to misuse. A change, since you mentioned public schools, some of these high-end private schools have classes with 10 and less students. And normal public school is consistently 33 to 40. It's pretty normal. And I think if money was channeled into more teachers, I mean, a lot of the teachers are kind of like cops and nurses. And everybody that works in any kind of public service, they get run ragged. They have a million kids. They have, if you got 40 in a class, you got three that want to be there. You got 25 that are going to kind of play by the rules. And you do that math on how many left are left menacing your classroom and not really caring about the consequences. But if the class size was shrunk, I think here are some of the effects that will follow. The teachers would be happier. They'd be less stressed out if they had eight kids in their English class, in their ninth grade English class. The chaos would be gone largely, because you're not going to get all 10 of those huge problem kids in one class. And the kids would get I think in 10 years, when those kids became adults, society would be on track. I think the realistic solution is smaller classes. And that may sound oversimplified, but I think the teachers are generally good. I've heard people bitch and moan about teachers, and people complain about everybody, cops, lawyers, everybody, judges, every step of the process. We're complaining about prisons and youth detention facilities right
Right.
now.
Right.
But I think we would have a lot less. I think that, if you leave your house, and I think, I mean, just to go down this rabbit hole, if you could provide two healthy meals a day at school, breakfast and lunch, you're on your own for dinner, little bro, but we're going to get you 200 or 2,000 calories during the day if you want it. So if you can show up a little early, just let's look at the difference in the day of, we'll call it 8 to 3, being there. Total chaos. You're hungry all day. My good friend is a public school teacher in South Georgia, and keeps food at her desk so that kids can come eat, because she says her class is always, the kids are always hungry. She's like, how can they learn if they're just hungry? So healthy food, not frozen pizza, and small classes. So you're not in a state of chaos. If your home is a fucking disaster, you have a safe place. Instead of going from chaotic home where dad's drunk and punching you, mom's smoking crack and turning tricks, to another chaotic place where it's gangland, you go to a safe place where there's nine kids. You can sit down in that chair and go, oh, and eat your plate of eggs. I mean, and then have a healthy lunch and go home maybe a little nervous, but you're not in that constant fight, flight, freeze mode. They get to shut down and be safe.
Well, it also changes your peer group too. Like,
Yeah.
if you get out of the, peer group that's all chaos, it has got to be an improvement. Like, what you're seeing modeled is like kids are normal and, they look at you weird if you're screaming or, whatever. And I think that that's,
Exactly.
but again, so much of it is that we're also training kids to be like, oh, you can't say that screaming in class is bad. Like, I mean,
Yeah.
we're doing a lot of
Yeah.
things that are really,
Yeah, like you got to let this kid be themselves. And if they scream, they scream. It's like, eh, I don't know about that.
that either. And I do understand having some empathy for kids that are in that, having empathy for kids that are in a bad situation, but that doesn't mean that they get to disrupt everybody else too. So it
Yeah.
is a complex problem. It is not simply a law enforcement problem. I think that's part of what I'm getting at with this too, is
Yeah.
that
Law enforcement is the band-aid for every problem in society. You slap it on, you go, oh, we're having robberies, arrest them. And, since I'm a little bit special and I just get stuck on subjects, I don't know what you call that, but I do. If the kids aren't doing it, if they become adults that aren't doing it because they weren't in this chaos, then it takes the weight off of law enforcement. It takes the weight off the judicial system because they actually graduate. And
yeah.
yeah, you can't just slap an arrest on a systemic problem with society where there's broken families. And when the families are together, they're not together because the kid's on their phone and there's all the vices are, I'm way in the rabbit hole now, but
Yeah, you
the
are.
the vices are, it was as your way of saying cut it
No.
out. I'll make it quick. The vices are celebrated. Comfort is celebrated, but comfort when it comes to food and drink and laziness, what's it lead to? Type 2 diabetes, hypertension, mental health issues. So the society has leaned toward the chasing of comfort as opposed to today being hard means tomorrow's going to be easy. It's almost the opposite. It's like, no, I want easy now. I want to, it's kids being on their phone half the night, so they're not sleeping because they're getting the constant stimulation and the dopamine dump, and so they don't sleep. And it's just this crazy cycle of issues.
It
End of
is.
rant, probably.
No, it's not gonna be. It is the end of rant for now. I mean, for me, because I know it's gonna rear its ugly head at some point again. But I think that what we're talking about is that while we can't arrest ourselves out of the problem, that doesn't mean we don't arrest. And we have to enforce the laws that exist. The laws that exist are designed, and what we're talking about with this specifically, this is designed to keep people safe. The gang laws aren't, and someone actually said this to me, is that the gang laws were put on the books to snatch up little boys off the street. And that is not it at all.
No.
To keep people from dying.
Yeah, that's just such an unrealistic view of somebody that hasn't been there. And if you've been in those gang neighborhoods, I don't even want to say gang, that has this crazy stigma to it. Those neighborhoods where there is significant gang activity, I'm going to make up a percent, 80 to 90, not even 80 to 90, 90 plus percent are not involved with gang activity in rough neighborhoods. But the 10% are ruining that neighborhood.
And people don't feel safe. They can't walk out
Yeah.
their door.
Yep.
And that, that's what you want the police for. That's what this law is designed for. and both federally and statewide. And I guess we're probably winding this up because, again, we're not going to answer all the questions and have all the answers for society. But I feel like what people should take away from this, from my perspective, is that we've got to enforce the law as it stands, and that will help to keep people safe. And we've got to find a way for people not to be afraid.
I mean, the answer, it's an age-old question. How do we have the best society we can that's free but also safe? How do we balance those things? Not have a police state,
Correct.
but also have, freedom and security. And what's the balance?
And we're doing the best that we can
Yeah.
what we got, but
At our level, yeah, we
right.
need some legislators to tune in and go, man, these two are making sense. I need them.
Hey,
I
yeah,
need to
maybe
listen to these two.
it's an idea. Let's hope that somebody's listening. Well, I really appreciate all of your time,
Of course.
and all of your expertise, because definitely I've learned a lot.
And all my ramblings.
My ramblings too. But I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing. And we'll be in touch.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Bye.
So, what is the answer to the problem of gang violence? Obviously, there is no simple solution, but consistent, evidence-based enforcement of the laws that are on the books offers some necessary structure and accountability for communities that are at risk. This kind of enforcement draws on citizens, families, schools, legislators, judges, prosecutors, and, of course, law enforcement. I'm truly grateful for that Leo guy and his willingness to share his experience. Stay tuned here and on social media to see what we will be up to next.